American politics may never be the same. On To The Point, we help you understand the trends driving this wild and woolly election.
Usually we don't have a presidential election in which the sanity of a major party candidate is really openly in question.
She's not the greatest politician. She says so herself.
She colors within the lines of American politics.
Does the Democratic Party need a reform? Absolutely.
I'm Armin Alney. Stay with To The Point through November and beyond on KCRW and KCRW.com.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a potato.
Monday's first debate was a clear win for Hillary Clinton, and the polls are shifting toward her. Donald Trump doesn't seem to have taken that well. He spent his week feuding with Miss Universe 1996. And President Obama had a veto overridden for the first time in his presidency. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow, senior editor at Business Insider. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Margie O'Mero, a Democratic pollster and executive vice president at PSB Research. Our special guest is Mickey Kouse, longtime political blogger, in fact, one of the earliest political bloggers in the late 1990s. He writes at KouseFiles.com. He's a Democrat, but he says he might vote for Donald Trump. Welcome, everybody. So if you've been on the internet this week, you've probably seen the shoulder shimmy meme, Hillary Clinton doing a little celebratory dance after Donald Trump launched a particularly bizarre attack on her, insisting that he has an excellent temperament and she's the real candidate with the bad temperament. She was, quote, totally out of control the other day when she was, quote, behind the blue screen, Trump said. Clinton responded with a, whoo, okay, and a shake of her shoulders that seemed emblematic of the whole debate, or at least of the last 75 minutes of the debate. Trump did have a relatively good opening where he focused on trade and the alleged problems it causes for the American economy and American workers before Clinton managed to start getting under his skin. Polls and focus groups have shown a clear Clinton win in the debate and an appreciable shift in voting intention toward her after the debate. So, with that, do any of you want to contest the idea that this was a clear Clinton win? Mickey, what did you make of the debate?
Well, when I watched it, I thought it was a draw because Trump won the beginning and Hillary won the end. So I figured more voters tune in to the beginning than the end. Hillary didn't make much of a positive case for herself. We know she's a person who can get under people's skin now. Is that such an appealing character to have? Her great success was to divert the debate from issues onto goading Donald Trump. I'm not sure that that's a long-lasting win, if it's a win. You know, the polls show that Romney won his first debate with Obama by a much bigger margin than Hillary did.
Margie, what do you think about that? Because we've seen what looks like a polling shift, but I and a lot of other people looking at these wonder how much that signals real changes in voter intention and how much of it is, you know, Hillary had a good debate, so when pollsters call her supporters, they're more eager to talk about politics. Trump supporters are more discouraged, but that doesn't necessarily mean they won't come out and vote for him.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things to think about and tease out when it comes to post-debate polling. I mean, the first is often you have a very short fielding time because people want the results right away, so you're not making as many callbacks as you want. You have then these kind of fake online polls that Donald Trump's been talking about where people can just refresh and vote as many times as they want, and that sort of muddies the water about what's been happening, even though they're not representative samples. And then you're right. There is a theory that people who are more engaged or more engaged for the winner are more likely to respond. And then the last thing to think about is, are people responding to the actual debate that they watched, or are they responding to clips in the news coverage about who won the debate? Although at some level, it doesn't matter. If everyone thinks that someone won the debate, then in fact they have, even if not everybody watched the same amount of debate. But I think in the end, what we're seeing is a very clear shift for Clinton. I mean, there's a shift in the national average. There are eight polls from what I've last seen. Eight polls have shown that voters think Clinton's the winner. Gallup has shown that she's considered the winner by a margin that puts her on the high end compared to all the debates that they've covered and looked at. So I think it's pretty clear what happened here. What we don't know yet is what's the staying power of this. Is this going to last through the vice presidential debate, or is the vice presidential debate going to generate a lot of news that will dominate next week? We don't know the answer to that. That's what we'll wait to see in the days ahead.
Rich, what do you think the debate meant?
Well, I have to say, I was kind of on Mickey's end of the spectrum. I thought Hillary won right afterwards, but won narrowly. And Trump, you know, he got his themes across. And I sort of think when he has these hazy, non-responsive answers, we're all of us are holding our heads in our hands. But he says, but look, she's a politician and all politicians are all talk. That's kind of the line that matters to most people. But it was a worse loss than I thought. And it's been magnified since with his various shenanigans. So she'll bounce up. She'll probably come back down. And again, we'll just need to see where it settles down. The vice presidential debate has to be a very welcome thing for the Trump campaign now, because it'll at least change the conversation, however that goes. But the post-debate has been more brutal even than the debate was for Trump.
So let's talk about the post-debate, which has been relatively bizarre, even compared to other extremely bizarre events that have occurred in the 15 months and counting of the Trump campaign. Basically, at the end of the debate, clearly very thought out and planned by the Clinton campaign, they brought out Alicia Machado, or the idea of Alicia Machado, this woman who had been Miss Universe 1996. She put on some weight while she was Miss Universe. This was shortly after Trump had bought the pageant. And so Trump paraded her in front of TV cameras, showing how fat she had gotten and that she needed to lose weight. And he made all sorts of crude comments about her weight thereafter. And it's a part of a broader pattern of behavior for him. And so instead of sort of saying, this is irrelevant, why won't you talk about issues, Trump has proceeded to spend much of the week relitigating this question and even saying things basically like it was a real problem that she put on so much weight. He won't even admit that he was wrong or overreaching 20 years ago. I don't know. Mickey, does this, you've been relatively Trump favorable, especially for a Democrat. Does this sort of thing make you second guess him at all? I mean, what does this mean he would do as president?
It makes me second guess his discipline, because Machado is a real issue, but he shouldn't be the one bringing it up. When her name came up, I looked at her Wikipedia page and my jaw dropped at how, let's say, colorful her background was. There are all sorts of charges about her. She's a semi-famous figure in Latin America. And there are legitimate questions about her credibility. Keep in mind, this was a beauty pageant, so you're supposed to judge people on their beauty. Trump says that his board of directors wanted to fire her, and he said no, he didn't want to fire her. Kellogg's apparently did fire her, or terminated her contract, or let it expire. If you look at the tape of the gym incident, he made fun of his own weight and reporters' weights. Yes, I accept that he's probably a guy who makes fun of women's weights. The other charge, Miss Housekeeping, seems weirder. That's the one that has the racial ethnic component. And we have to take Machado's word for it, and her credibility is therefore relevant.
But this all just seems beside the point to me. I mean, so what if Alicia Machado, has had, you know, a colorful life and, you know, high-profile breakups and maybe was involved in certain scandals, although never charged with anything. It doesn't go to the question of whether Donald Trump does things that are beneath the dignity of the presidency of the United States. And whatever Alicia Machado did after 1996 is irrelevant to the question of whether Donald Trump behaved appropriately toward her during 1996. There's no tape of him saying, Miss Housekeeping, but there is tape of him saying, this is a woman who likes to eat, and things like that. So it's sort of, it doesn't matter whether she's credible. And that's the thing that the Trump campaign doesn't seem to have grasped, that there's no way to win this issue, even if they could be right on several points regarding Machado herself.
It was a trap. And this is the advantage of having a real presidential campaign. This had been thought out by the Clinton campaign. It had been organized. You had various press outlets ready to go with sympathetic profiles of her, including Cosmopolitan. You had a web video ready to go and a conference call ready to go. And they probably would have done all of that even if Trump hadn't taken the bait. But he takes the bait a little bit at the debate and then an interview in Fox and Friends afterwards. And I think Mickey's right about her background. It's just no way any of that's really going to seep through the mainstream media, one. And two, even if she's a beauty pageant queen with a sketchy background, you're still the presidential candidate punching down. And I was struck looking at some of these videos. Now we're all obsessively trying to figure out the weight controversy over Miss Universe 1996. But you watch some of these media interviews. And I watched one this morning. It was on CBS News. And both the interviewer and Trump and Machado pretty much take, oh yeah, it was a horrible thing that she gained 20 pounds. It was sort of like, it was taken as a given. And it's obviously a different cultural time now, which just goes to a continued failing of Donald Trump. And this goes to his character. He can just never admit error or say, oh, sorry. All he has to say is, look, that was a different time. It was 20 years ago. I wouldn't say it now. Instead, he always has to double down or find some way where he's the victim and he was vindicating truth and justice. And the real problem with the debate and this controversy was the debate was a real opportunity to just change those numbers on temperament, on suitability and fitness to be president. And he has some more opportunities coming up in the second and third debates. But every day that passes and that number is still 60% or more, he's not suited, you got to think it's getting a little bit more set in concrete, a little bit set in concrete. And at some point, it's going to be too late if it's not already.
Margie, one of the things that we read in advance of the debate was that Hillary Clinton, as part of her debate prep, was consulting with a team of psychologists trying to figure out Donald Trump's psychological weaknesses and basically the ways that you could prod him to lash out in very much the way that we actually saw. I mean, it looks like that choice has gotten borne out, right? Even though that wouldn't be a normal part of debate prep against a normal candidate.
No, I mean, the funny thing, look, so Democrats in advance of the debates, that there was this thread of, and I said it too, why are we grading Trump on a curve, right? Why are we giving him the benefit of the doubt if he just can, you know, eke out a couple sentences we all applaud like he is some kind of genius? But in fact, what we learned at this debate is he was not being graded on a curve. He, you know, people expected or wanted to see him be coherent for 90 minutes, and he couldn't. And so therefore, he was deemed the loser of the debate. And whether or not we were talking about Machado or we're talking about the 5,000 other crazy fights he's had with folks in the last year, it all is part of a pattern. And we should not be surprised that he took the bait. We should not be surprised that he seems cruel and can't stay to a message. And on top of that, we shouldn't be surprised that he can't be coherent about basic presidential duties in a 90-minute unscripted debate. Well,
to make Trump's case, he really does have a point about Machado's past and credibility. And one question I have is, did the Hillary people know about her past when they brought her forward and just go ahead anyway? Or did they not know about it?
But what's the point? Oh, he has a point. I mean, the point is what? So therefore, it was okay that he was
the point is maybe
at the
he
time?
Didn't maybe he didn't say Miss Housekeeping, which is a weird ethnic slur. And whenever you bring, you know, whenever you we had one in the Mig Whitman race, whenever you bring one of these accusers, an aggrieved victim, it matters whether they're telling the truth or not.
So then but we even, have all even week. If he didn't we have all that. Week of him acting crazy, right? We have all week of him going on Fox News and tweeting at 5 a.m.
But he hasn't been engaging in ethnic slurs. He's been saying she's a you know, sleazeball.
Now
but
that
that's
we're
such
talking
a
about
thin
grading
read.
Him on a curve.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
so
a low
in
bar,
this
per- for sure.
In this particular instance, perhaps he did not engage in any racial commentary as part of his overall cruelty and crudeness. But we know that he was cruel and crude in this instance. And we know that he has used racially charged language in the past to attack people like Judge Curiel. So I think, you know, Mickey, you're right on points on that. But
if,
so what?
If it just dawned on the public that Trump is crude about women, I mean, where have they been? That's not the news. The news of it, I thought, was the alleged anti-Latino comment. And Hillary brought it up for a reason and emphasized it for a reason because that's a huge deal.
Mickey, just in political terms, the whole point of the Trump pivot, such as it's been the last month, is to take the edge off of all this stuff. Take the edge off his, you know, crudeness towards women. Take the edge off his perceived hostility to Latinos. And that's why this controversy is just a loser. And it doesn't matter if she didn't just drive the getaway car, as she's alleged in this murder case in Venezuela. It doesn't matter if she gunned someone down in the street, really. this is just, she is the very worst spokesperson he could give a better platform to, and he's done it over the last four or five days.
I agree he shouldn't have brought it up himself, and I agree the debate was a huge missed opportunity. As Ann Coulter says, when he talks about issues, he does well. When he talks about himself, he loses. Nobody really cares about himself, and he has to get that through his head.
Well,
except
plurality
for one,
of
except
Trump.
For one person. Donald Trump.
I mean, a plurality of Trump voters feel that it was inappropriate for him to go after her. So Mickey, you're in the minority, even among Trump supporters, because most of them say this is really a loser.
I often am.
We got to get in a quick break here, but we'll be back talking a little bit more about the debate and the Saudi 9/11 bill. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. Support the podcast you enjoy by donating at kcrw.com/join. And thanks.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Josh Barrow of Business Insider and MSNBC. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Margie O'Meara, Democratic pollster and executive vice president at PSB Research. And Mickey Kaus, a Democratic blogger who says he might vote for Trump, is also with us. So, substance at the debate. Did we learn anything substantively from this debate?
I
will take that silence as a no. The debate was, this campaign has been all about, cultural division and undirected rage. So I think it's fine to discuss the debate mostly in those terms. I did think the one interesting bit of policy was Donald Trump finding his way to the left on various things, saying now that he thinks that we should find a way to stop people on the terror watch list from buying guns, an issue that he has not taken a really clear position on, but that's not the position the NRA would like to hear, and him emphasizing how he and Hillary Clinton have somewhat similar ideas about childcare subsidies and paid maternity leave. Now, their plans are different, and he noted their plans are different, but it seems at the same time that he has been alienating certain centrists as an extremist, he is also still continuing to sell out conservatives on various ideas that they're supposed to care about on policy.
Well, so it's perfect, right? It's best of all worlds.
I don't know if it's selling out. One issue he should have gotten to Hillary's left on and didn't was the issue of war and peace, and specifically the Libya invasion, which he didn't bring up. That's the big issue where he can sort of confound expectations. And that's an issue he's not selling out. That's an issue he's run on consistently. That's what Donald Trump stands for, is rejecting the Republican consensus on war and a lot of other issues. So that was the missed opportunity, the chance to get to her left on big issues.
A lot of ways, we talked about this before, he's a centrist. He believes that we can have national unity around just running the government better. He is not a conservative ideologue in the least, but a few of his high-profile positions, and especially his demeanor, just overwhelm all of that. So it doesn't matter that in the first debate, seen by 84 million people, that he was hugging Hillary Clinton on childcare just because he interrupted her 50 times and in other ways behaved like a wild-eyed guy. And that's just what creates the biggest impression.
For me, the policy, well, I learned that his 10-year-old son is very good at the computers. So that was, I guess, a new finding. We learned that he doesn't, or we were reminded that he doesn't have a substantive grasp on policy. This is something that we know people try to really read closely into his remarks, how he feels about this issue or that issue. But when it comes to things like abortion or guns or gender pay equity or our involvement abroad, he is very hard to pin down because he doesn't really care about the details. That's obvious. And he hasn't studied. He hasn't been following. I guess he's not quite into Gary Johnson levels, but he's almost there.
Did you see a positive policy message from Hillary Clinton? Do you think she articulated an idea about what she would do to address ordinary voters' concerns?
I think she reiterated a lot of her core points in terms of childcare and the middle class in her intro. I think there was a lot of contrasting with Trump, to be sure. She talked a lot more about inclusion than did Trump, obviously. But it wasn't, I agree with the others in the sense that it wasn't a policy heavy debate. But I got to tell you, I think if you presented Hillary Clinton with an option saying, okay, we're not going to talk about any scandals of any kind for anybody, we're just going to do policy only. That's it. Not only policy. You and Trump for the rest of the time, just policy. I think she'd take that. She would take that, take that deal in a heartbeat.
Well,
be in the same exact place where she is now.
I guess I disagree. I thought she didn't do anything to dispel the idea that a Hillary Clinton presidency would be a dreary 4 years of mincing incremental attempts to advance what is the current Democratic dogma, which isn't bad, but it's just sort of a dispiriting prospect. People are unhappy with the direction the country is going, and her argument is we're going to keep going in that direction.
Marjorie, I want to ask you about the poll shift after the debates and the a broader argument that I'm hearing about. Is this a volatile election, or is this, in fact, a very stable election? I was speaking this morning with Sam Wang, the professor from Princeton who runs one of the five big models that people pass around, like 538 and the Times Upshot model. And his position has basically been that, you know, Hillary's been narrowly but comfortably ahead the whole time, and that this election on some fundamental level is boring if you strip out all of the Alicia Machado-style scandals. Do you agree with that?
I mean, almost. I mean, Sam, as I understand how the different forecasters work, Sam's projections rely only on the state level models as opposed to national polls. And so the state polling has been better for Clinton than the national polling, which, of course, obviously the state polling is what matters on election day. I think that's part of why his number has always been a bit higher than some of the others out there. And I think there is some truth to the fact that it has been fairly stable. I mean, Clinton is up far more often than Trump is. There have only been a few times where Trump has been up. There haven't been that many polls where he's been up. There's only been basically like one or two days where 538 has shown Clinton not having an over 50% chance of winning. So at some level, yes, right? And there was a real stretch where she was up by a considerable margin. That said, this election makes people feel very uneasy and very anxious. And that's not really just about the polls. That's about, you know, the language, the toxicity, the, you know, the drama, the you know, all the fighting. I mean, it's hard to set that aside because that is part of how people are evaluating the election, and they feel very much more anxious than they have in the past.
It's funny. One of the people I think who's been made very anxious by this election is Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who just after we went to tape last week came out with his endorsement of Donald Trump. Rich, I want to know what you make of that. Is this all naked political calculation? In July, he thought he was better off not endorsing. Now he thinks he's better off endorsing, and he may have had quite bad timing and that he seems to have picked what may have been Donald Trump's peak in the polls to endorse.
Yeah, it's one thing for Ted Cruz to anger and cross John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and the Chamber of Commerce. It's an entirely different thing to cross conservative talk radio and the grassroots. And that's what he did in his convention speech. And obviously it makes no sense to have the highest, most memorable moment perhaps at both conventions, maybe more memorable, to make the statement that very explicitly doesn't endorse Donald Trump, and then turn around a month and a half later and endorse him. And it's because he was getting banged on by his base and worries about the effect if Trump loses, and he's running in 2020. And I think they also just realized, end of the day, he was going to vote for him in Texas, and he was going to have to say he voted for him, so might as well come out early and try to get all the benefit you can from Trump supporters. But I think there's some chance he's going to get the worst of both worlds out of this.
Does this finally damage his brand? I mean, because this is so too clever by half, and his whole branding was supposed to be, I'm the principled conservative. I feel like the people that he sold that message to, do they finally get this, or can you fool them over and over?
Well, the thing is, kind of his base, quote-unquote principled conservatives, are all with Trump. So I'm not sure whether they're going to have that reaction to him. Now, the opinion makers very well might have that reaction to them, but we see how much all of us matter in Republican presidential politics.
Mickey, before we turn to Saudi Arabia, I just wanted to ask your thought. Do you think that this remains a volatile race? Do you still think a Trump win is a likely outcome?
I do. Likely, probably not, but it's definitely within the realm of possibility. If you look at the Real Clear Politics average today, state by state, assuming they're giving every state to the winner in the polls currently, Hillary wins, but if Trump just wins Florida, he wins. So it's very close. And there's also the possibility, now that's probably a little behind the curve there, but the other thing is there might be a hidden Trump vote, you know, the famous Bradley effect, the way there was a hidden Brexit vote.
Margie, are you concerned at all about shy Trump voters?
No, this comes up quite a bit, right? So if people were embarrassed about saying they were voting for Trump, you would see a mode effect. You would see that in online polling, Trump would be doing a lot better than in live calls where people would have to tell a person. And you haven't really seen that. That was something that happened a little bit in the primary, and then it went away. And the vote actually matched the live calls more than the online in the primary. So this shy Trump thing is not really borne out by the data. I just don't really see how that's, you know, that's a real large factor. And then the last thing I'll say about it is that, you know, when your strategy relies on, you know, this like secret group of people who are too embarrassed to say they're voting for your candidate, I mean, that is hardly a secret weapon. That's a real sign of weakness.
Especially when you have no operation to then actually turn those people out and get them to the polls. I want to turn quickly to the first veto override of President Obama's presidency. This is a new law that allows Americans to sue foreign governments over their involvement in terrorist attacks and is widely expected to be used by 9/11 families to sue the government of Saudi Arabia. Obama vetoed this bill, saying it sets a bad precedent, that it undermines sovereign immunity, which means that it will encourage other countries to make similar changes that would allow their citizens to sue the U.S. government in foreign courts over perceived damages to them by the U.S. and perhaps even to sue U.S. service members themselves. There already seems to be some buyer's remorse in Congress, with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell saying the bill will need some reworking after the election. So first of all, do any of you want to stick up for the idea that this was a good bill and a good policy? So why did it pass the Senate by 97-1?
It's kind of typical legislating. It's a feel-good cause. No one likes the Saudis, and everyone you know, feels horrible about what happened to the families of victims of September 11th. And so why not let them sue the Saudis? But I'm just shocked at Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, whatever else you think of them, are kind of thoughtful legislators, that this problem didn't occur to them before, because it was the main criticism of this bill from the beginning. So it's just classic thoughtless legislating, and for me, an indicator of how this whole year has gone. The one time Congress overrides an Obama veto, Congress is wrong.
At first, I thought the bill was just sort of a make-believe bill, because there is this provision in it that says the State Department can stay the lawsuit if it pretends to be negotiating with the Saudis. But apparently it wasn't make-believe enough that the Saudis really are annoyed.
We've reached that time once again for our famed left, right, and center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Margie O'Meara, it's your soapbox.
So it seems like we need a reminder that women's issues are not just things that simply mention ladies or broads or hens, which I've been referred to by one of my internet commenters. Women's issues are more than just how people treat women in their personal lives. It's even more than things like abortion or birth control, more than pretty pictures of babies or saber rattling about the sisterhood. It's all of those things, and also economic equality. But it doesn't matter how we define women's issues. Trump has failed, whether it's 9 p.m. Monday Trump or 5:30 a.m. Friday morning Trump.
Rich Lowry.
Not always, but very often, police-involved shootings that initially are thought to confirm the Black Lives Matter narrative turned out to be much more complicated as more facts come in, at the very least. In the Charlotte shooting of Keith Scott, we are told, especially by the family, there was no way he could have had a gun. And now it emerges that about a year ago, his wife requested a restraining order against him because he threatened her with a gun. It's yet more evidence in this instance he was probably armed and potentially dangerous.
Mickey Kaus.
My beef is with the fact-checking. This may be old, and it ties in with Rich's point. We used to have arguments about things. Now we only have sort of more vicious, less informative debates about whether something is true or false. And in part, that's because the partisans on each side believe that their set of facts is true.
For my rant, as I was watching the debate this Monday, I ended up thinking about the climactic scene from the 1998 poker film Rounders. Now, you may remember this movie with John Malkovich and Matt Damon playing poker. John Malkovich is Teddy KGB, this crusty old Russian, and he eats Oreos while he plays. And Matt Damon eventually figures out that the way he eats the Oreos tells you whether he has a good hand or not. Now, you could just sit back and watch and bet accordingly, but Matt Damon realizes if he lets John Malkovich know he knows about the tell, John Malkovich will fly off the handle, go on tilt, and make all sorts of bad plays and give up all of his chips. This is more or less what Hillary Clinton did to Donald Trump in Monday's debate, and it had to have worked far better than she could possibly have imagined that it would. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank Rich Lowry, Margie O'Mero, and Mickey Kaus. Laura Dinemillion produced today's program. Our technical director is J.C. Swadek. I'm Josh Barrow. Thank you for joining us, and tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes and share your comments at kcrw.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed at KCRW.